Your work involves a lot of travelogue or other sort of documentation of journeys. And I was just wondering if perhaps your influences lay in writers such as W.G. Sebald, or I know you've been compared to Patrick Keeler. What are your thoughts on that?
As writers, I mean, Sebald, I've enjoyed, but not nearly as much as Ian Sinclair. And I think my relationship with Ian grew out of a love for Lights Out for the Territory, The Edge of Orison, Hackney Roads, Red Empire. But I think before, there was a tradition like Wilfred Thesiger, for instance, Eric Newby, Devlin Murphy. These were people that were travelling, and they were writing slightly more kind of conventionally. Paul Theroux, Theroux is another one, writing a little bit more conventionally about their journey, about their travelling. And they're all landscape writers, really. And but I was equally as interested in, you know, the writings of, say, Beckett. The thing about Samuel Beckett is more about the inscape. It's about the journeying that you can do in inside. And so I would take Beckett, I would take Joyce with me if I'm walking within the landscape, and kind of reflect upon the kind of marriage of the two. That there's an external, pragmatic, corporeal journey that you're making, and then there's an internal, cerebral, kind of existential journey that you're making, and kind of it's about the marriage of those two things. But I think the thing that draws, say, Ian Sinclair and myself together is the physicality. Is that Ian is also very physical, and he needs, you know, it's not some kind of myth that he needs to beat the bounds. He needs to walk. He does, you know, and he kind of gets his creative juices flowing. And for me, it's a little bit more about endurance. If I'm in the landscape, I like to be in the landscape with a sleeping bag for, you know, 2 or 3 days without a lot of food. And then, you know, you hallucinate. You become hypersensitive to kind of the animistic presences within the landscape. And then that starts informing the work. So I'm less likely to read Sebald in the sense that, you know, I kind of always felt that his journeying was more cerebral, but I personally needed to go out into the world and then come back and find other kind of cerebral journeys and not read his. But it's the it's a love of swimming and running and a kind of a dislike of central heating that drives me into the landscape a lot. It's that I'd rather be outside than inside.
So in that sense, do you find, for want of a better way to phrase it, physical or mental hardship a great catalyst for creativity?
Yes, absolutely. One of my mantras has always been, you know, you should never be comfortable with the comfortable. You know, therein lies a kind of cocoon madness. And I think if everything is too comfortable, then, you know, it's just, you become sated. It's like you might as well go and spend the rest of your life in a shopping mall. You know, kind of Ballard writes about that. And we become sanitized, and you need to be reminded, you know, it's important that you slam your fingers in the car door once a month. If you don't, then shame on you.
I like that philosophy. Okay, so I need to talk a bit about Swan Down, really. Can you tell us a bit more about it and a bit more about the Cornerhouse's involvement in it?
Yeah, the Cornerhouse have been kind of vital in helping kind of secure the deal. And that really was Sarah's, I think, relationship with Lisa Marie Russo, who's one half of Fly Film. And Lisa Marie was pitching the film, and Sarah got it, and a lot of people at the Cornerhouse got it. And really what we're hoping to do is kind of premiere the film next year. You know, it should be done. We've made the journey. We pedalled from Hastings to Hackney. It's almost 160 miles by Swan-shaped pedaler. And almost 160 hours of footage, which I'm tediously working my way through at the moment. It needs to be ready in time for the Olympics, which is one of Ian's criteria. You know, it has to be ready as a kind of, not necessarily as a kind of conventional political protest, but it's just to say this was an endeavour which is Olympian. This is something that the Olympics is about. It's not about the corporatization. It's not about merchandise. It's not about the hubris that is the self-congratulatory kind of Olympic committee. There's something about the grass-rootedness of Swan Down that he kind of wants to be out there in time. So we're hoping that, we'll premiere at the Abandon Normal Devices Festival next year. And we might even be doing a live performance or something in conjunction with the completed film.
Do you have any idea what this live performance will entail, or is that still in embryo?
It will probably involve lots of Super 8 projections. It'll involve walkie-talkies. It will involve some of Ian Sinclair's text. It will probably involve me taking my clothes off, running around the stage in my Swan Down underpants, which were made specially to stop the chafing of 6 days a week on board a swan-shaped pedalo. And it will also involve me showing off the new calf and thigh muscles that I developed from having pedalled so far. It's Benny Hill meets Joseph Boyce is what it will be.
I'll be there. So one question I have been wanting to ask you is, all the work of yours that I've seen has sort of had quite a home movie feel to it. And I was just wondering, how has advancements in digital filming technologies, how has that impacted on your work? And do you think the media has become slightly less of the message with the advancement of more and more complex digital technologies?
I think when the world went digital, certainly in terms of, for me as an editor, it made it a lot easier to manipulate. I mean, something I was always doing when I was younger was working, moving sound and image and organically and just seeing what happened when you, and invariably not working in sync. I think that was always vital. That's one of the reasons I fell in love with Super 8, is that you were free from the kind of marriage between, the conventional marriage between sound and image. So you could shoot silently, and then you'd have to think about sound with as much kind of attention and detail as you were thinking about the image. And kind of ironically, it then meant that soundtracks became a lot more complicated, a lot more interesting than perhaps they would have been if I was just a slave to shooting in sync. But then there came a moment where, you know, when things started moving towards the digital, and I remember cutting my first film in Lightworks, which is pre-Final Cut, the options that you had at your disposal were almost intolerable because there were so many different things that you could do. And it took me quite a while to get used to that. It took me quite a while to kind of be a little bit more rigorous in terms of just stopping those experiments. And now because, and also digital for a while was a little bit more, people were kind of very deferential towards it. And you needed to know about the interfaces. You needed to know about DOS, or you needed to know about some of the software before you could start doing things with it. But now I think, you know, it's so ubiquitous. It's so user-friendly. It's so inspiring that it's frightening. You know, it's there and you can do it. And that's perhaps why a film like This Hour Still Life is, it wouldn't have been possible without the, you know, without digital. And yet at the same time, it possibly, if I hadn't said, right, okay, stop, you know, there's, it only needs to be an hour long. You've got to limit yourself to shooting, going through all the stuff you shot in the last 20 years. It could still be going now. And I might be looking to make things even better, you know, to think about reshooting stuff with, you know, ProRes or full HD instead of blah, blah, blah. And then I think sometimes it's, you know, creates kind of crises or creates this incredible bad dilemma whereby you're always looking for more perfection. You're looking to try and get things better in inverted commas, whatever that means. Whereas I think the way I treat digital has always been the way in which I've treated most media, is that you jump in with both feet and you make things up as you go along and you see what happens. And there just needs to be something. It's that punctum that Barthes talks about. There needs to be something that hits you that's unexpected, that you don't forget. And you know, it can be the film in general, like the plot, or it can be, you know, the cum shot, if you're talking about pornography, which I know we're not. But it needs to be, there needs to be something that grabs you. And I think with This Hour Still Life, it's very much kind of my relationship to Eden and Layla and this place. And I suspect that in Swandown, it's just the absurdity of peddling this swan-shaped pedalo from Hastings to Hackney. And you see that in people's faces, you know, when you're pedaling, they go, what the fuck are you doing? And that's got nothing to do with digital. I mean, you know, the fact that we have digital cameras and recorders, you know, documenting that kind of thing, that performance, what's important is the punctum that we hope to find through mediating all this footage. And that's got nothing to do with digital, it's got nothing to do with analog, it's got nothing to do with performance, it's just something else, it's the sum of its parts. And that's the hardest thing to do. And there is no recipe for that. It's trial and error. It really is. It's just hunkering down and trying things out.